Welcome to ECE Honestly.
Hi, and welcome to ECE Honestly. Here we discuss the ups and downs of working in the field of early childhood education. So listen, hopefully learn, and enjoy. Before we begin, I would like to acknowledge that I am speaking to you from the unceded and traditional territories of the Coast Salish people, including the Kwakwutlam, Tsleil-Waututh, Squamish, and Stolo peoples. So on today's episode, we are going to be talking with Julie Hansen, again from Inspired ECE. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Kayla.
Always a pleasure to speak to you. And we're going to be talking today about product art versus process art. If any of the listeners or followers saw, I want to say back in November, I did sort of an Instagram story in regards to what the difference is between product art and the difference between process art and what people in the community thought about both of them. And it was very interesting to see the level of discussion that came from this topic of conversation. And before I begin, maybe what I'll do is I will give the definition between the difference between product and process, just so we all know we're on the same page. So I'll start first with product art. Product art is typically when a child begins a project knowing what the end product is going to look like, and they're going to follow a set of instructions to get to that goal. And product art has typically, it very much, there's a right way to do it and there's a wrong way to do it. And it's not uncommon, and I would say that 99.9% of the time, it's the adult that shows the child what the end product is going to look like. What do you think, Julie?
I agree. And oftentimes you'll see that there's an example given to the children to say, okay, this is what we're doing today. And this is what we're going to make. And the word that's often described with that type of art is craft.
Yes.
For me. And when I'm teaching my messy art workshop, I do the definition of, I call it an open-ended art experience versus a craft. Mm-hmm. An educator or teacher, whichever term you choose to use, will be the one that determines what the craft is and what it's going to look like, versus open-ended art experience. The children are the ones that determine how they are going to use or manipulate those materials into their creation.
Definitely. And I think that's a great segue to get into what the definition of process art is. So process art, or open-ended art, like you've described it, Julie, is basically where the end process is not the principal focus. So that's a big one. The end product is not the focus of this art. The process of making is the most relevant aspect, if not the most important one. You know, the gathering of materials, the sorting of materials, collating, the associating, patterning. And like you said, most importantly, it is the child who is in complete control of what they are doing, how they are doing it, and what the end result is. And I would go further to say that process art, you can learn so much more about the individual child from them taking control than from me telling them, make the snowman that your 25 other peers are making.
Right. And I think when we give children the opportunity to explore materials in their own individual way, we are showing them how valued they are, how much we appreciate them, and that we as educators are along, going along with them in their learning journey. And we're learning as well. Like, I love looking at documentation of children exploring art materials and thinking about, oh, wow, I didn't know that that child was going to use the materials that way, or I've never seen it done like that. Or also thinking about schematic learning through art. I love looking at it through that lens and thinking about, you know, the types of materials that we can provide with children, whether it's recycled materials that we're incorporating into open-ended art experiences or natural materials. Really, the possibilities are endless. And also, I really think it's very important for us as educators to look at how we are incorporating the children's interests into these types of invitations or experiences.
Absolutely. And I love how you brought up the schematic learning of each individual child, because if we really are going to be valuing children, And if we're going to be going back to this idea of the 100 languages of children, what really are we doing if we're telling them, okay, you know, here's three pom-poms. These two pom-poms are eyes. You know, this one is the nose. You're going to make a zigzag here. You're going to glue this here. You're going to glue that there. How is that really valuing the 100 languages of children if we are telling them what they need to be doing?
And also asking children inquiry-based questions as they're involved in these materials. And I remember sharing that story with you that I had with an educator when I was young that had a huge impact on me in my daily practice as an early childhood educator. And maybe I should share that story now because I think it's so poignant. So when I was a young child and I was at school and it was this time of year and I was asked to make a Santa Claus by my teacher. And so we were all asked to make a Santa Claus and we were shown an example of the Santa Claus, but I had chosen to put many more eyes on the Santa Claus than was apparently required. So my mom was informed that I had put too many eyes on the Santa Claus, and in conversation between my mom, myself, and the teacher, I told them why I had put so many eyes on the Santa Claus. And that was because I felt there were so many children around the world that Santa needed to be able to see.
I love that.
For me, that was what I was doing. I was like, well, he needs to see all the children. And if the way I view that, I view that as an educator now, so many possibilities. Let's talk about cultural celebrations around the world of this time of year and what that means, and really exploring the importance of that idea.
Yes.
And looking at it, I would not be looking at it from a negative. I would be celebrating the possibilities and the positive and the thoughtfulness that, right? And so I think that when we slow ourselves down, and I say this whenever I'm teaching workshops and whenever I'm interacting with educators, if I had one wish for our sector is that we would slow down and be more present and be more in the moment. And I use the acronym OWL, observe, wait, and listen, and really pay attention to what the children are saying as they're playing and exploring materials. Really, it gives us those incredible challenges as educators to push us forward and to really look at our own daily practice as well. And open-ended art experiences is a wonderful format for that.
Definitely. But I also, my biggest thing too, and I think this is something that a lot of educators may or may not kind of get stuck in. And you're kind of, you know, when you're talking about this big deal of Santa having multiple eyes, my thing that I kind of take away from that story too is from an educator's lens is, so Santa has multiple eyes. Is it really worth losing our mind over? Do you know what I mean?
No.
Like, there's so many worse things that we could lose our mind over that a child gluing multiple eyes to Santa.
And the other way I look at it too is the individuality. Like, if my mom had walked in and saw that, she'd probably know, hey, that's Jules. She loves, that's hers.
Yeah.
You know, like, and it's honoring that. And I really love it. And I think talking about the curation of children's artwork, first of all, for me, when I am doing that, I always ask children, would you like this displayed or curated or not? It's their choice. It's their artwork. It belongs to them. Yes. And also, if I'm documenting, I always ask, can I take your picture? That's respect.
Definitely.
And I think too, when families walk into a program space, for me as an educator, it's very important that they see themselves, their family, and their child, obviously. And through art, we're able to do that.
Definitely.
So I think, you know, when a family walks in and they can see their individual child through their artwork, they're not going to see 16 of the same thing and only be able to identify it by their child's name written at the bottom.
Yes, absolutely. And not only that, but then it also shows parents that their child is going to be respected in that space, and they're not going to be a mindless drone where I'm going to tell you what to do or how to do things or when to do things. But my relationship with your child is going to be a reciprocal, respectful relationship where I'm going to listen to you and what it is that you're going to want to do. And then by same turn, we're going to get that same respect back. And what a better learning experience.
And also, is there the flexibility within the program philosophy to do that? I remember one particular time when we'd gone for a nature walk and we'd collected some materials, and a child came up to me and she said, Joy, I want to paint with this. I want to paint with this branch that I brought back. And I said, sure.
Yes.
Paint them. So we got the paints out. We got a big piece of mural paper and I put it down on the floor. And a couple other children grabbed the branches that they had brought in with them because we were doing a little scavenger hunt. And they were all started to paint with what they considered were their natural paintbrushes.
Love it. And what a great way to learn about texture. And
exactly. And we had the freedom and the flexibility to be able to do that. And I think when we follow the children's lead, again, shows that we are honoring them, we're valuing them, and that we're really listening to what their needs are.
Definitely.
And paying attention to those interests and looking at your program and do you have the flexibility within your space? Is your environment set up to be able to accommodate that or easily shift things to be able to do that? And I think when we look at art as well, that it's not just one piece of paper per child, per seat on a table. Mm-hmm. Do you have the ability to do murals with infants and toddlers as well? Are you working with 3D art experiences? Are you doing art that's progressive over a week that maybe starts out with some painting and then maybe you're adding in different collage materials that the children can choose to add into it? Are you doing washes? Like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. Is clay present?
In yes.
You know, for me, I always say that clay is kind of like a basic in your wardrobe. Yep. It needs to be a basic in your program, right?
Oh, 100%.
It needs to be present. And looking at your space and how many art opportunities are you offering in your space at any time? Do you have a free art shelf? Do you have an art experience that you're doing each day? Is it only done in the morning or are you offering that same experience again in the afternoon? Because not every child is going to go over to that art experience at a particular time of day. So looking at offering it at multiple times of the day, and also thinking about how are you offering it? Is your expectation that every child does art every day? Or is it your philosophy that you are going to offer it to the children? If they go over and explore it, they do. And if they don't, they don't.
Yes.
I think it's really important for teams to have very clear, consistent conversations around these topics and that this is part of your philosophy and parents understand that.
And I like how you bring up that parents understand that, because I think so many a times, and I just had this conversation literally 25 minutes ago with my own mother, who was also a family, who does family childcare and has been doing that for, you know, a good amount of time. And it's so funny. We were literally outside and I said to her, like, she said, well, what are you doing this morning? And I was like, oh, I'm going to do this episode with you, Julie. And I told her what the expectation was, what the conversation was going to be about. And she goes, oh, product and process art. She goes, you know, and I said to her, I was like, yeah, you know, I've noticed you do a lot of product art, mom. And she was like, well, she's like, I don't like it, but that's what parents expect. And I was like, aha. And I like, and this is what I love the conversation about my mother and I was like, I was able to call her out on that. And I said to her, I was like, okay, well, that's your problem for not standing up for your philosophy. And she just kind of looked at me and went, oh. I was like, because I told her, I was like, if you don't like product art and if you don't believe in product art, why are you doing it to parent, please?
Yeah. And I think when we talk about our responsibilities as educators, and this is just my personal opinion, I say this regularly, 50% of, I believe, my job is educating children and 50% of my job is educating families.
Yes.
So whether you are sending out, yes, it's very present in your parent package. This is our philosophy around art and exploration of materials and what have you. I also used to send out a parenting article every month on a variety of different things. And it wasn't just on like meal prep or snack ideas or things like that or morning routines. I would also do one on the importance of open-ended art experiences.
Yeah.
How children learn through about sensory learning, like all of these different types of things. I always say there's a purpose and intent behind everything we do as educators. And sometimes we really need to speak up for that purpose and intent and our professionalism, how highly trained we are, and our education and explain that.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Definitely.
And parents usually are very open to that. And let's talk about like quote unquote parent pleasers for a second, especially around this time of year.
holidays are such a big time for the crafts to come out.
Because it's
not uncommon. And I think I wrote this in the post that I did about product versus process art is your parental expectation that a craft is going to go home so that they have a memento to put on their Christmas tree or, a Christmas gift or something that kind of, commemorates their time in childcare for, holiday season 2021.
I think it's layered. And this is where I've come to. This is my opinion again. But what I, after a lot of thought, it's very layered. One, this is a very treasured time in childhood, right? Families want these mementos, and so they should have mementos of this time. Then you've got the other side of the educator. Educator's philosophy, sticking true to your philosophy and what you believe, and especially if it's your own center, right? And so where I am is let's find the middle ground. And also thinking about the different holidays that are celebrated around this time of year, honoring those holidays that are celebrated specifically by the families that attend your program.
Yes. And it's such a wonderful conversation to build community with
100%. The way that I've approached it is I look at, instead of say a specific Christmas gift, I look at a holiday gift. So what is a gift that I could give to a family that we could do with the children that works for everyone? That's a memento honoring the season or the time of the year and figuring out that middle ground. So one of the things that I put up on my Instagram, on Inspired EC Instagram, not long ago is after our initial conversation about this, is I put up a very simple activity that I've done a few times. I used to take black and white candid portraits of the children. And then what we would do sometimes is we would do just get some bubble wrap. The children could paint the bubble wrap different colors. And then we would get a canvas. And then the children could do prints on the canvas. Nice open-ended experience. And then we would mount the black and white photograph on that canvas. Mm-hmm. And you can get little easels. And it's a beautiful little memento gift. Celebrate the winter season and this holiday time. But it's open-ended and it sort of meets the criteria for everybody.
Absolutely. And I mean,
decorate a little bag if you wanted to as the holiday gift, maybe with, if you wanted to do print painting with whatever. But I think that looking at what that happy medium is,
yes,
where we as educators need to be.
Absolutely. Because I mean, yes, of course, we want to understand that, obviously we want parents to be happy. Under no circumstances do we not want parents to be happy. And I think, again, that's another conversation is, yes, we want to stick true to our philosophies, but, also at the end of the day, having those respectful conversations with our families, because it's not a culture of us versus them. It's a culture of community. And can't we all come to an understanding?
And looking at that and also, finding a way to honor the child in all of this.
Yes, definitely. Because we don't want to be those adults making the decisions for the child.
So that's where I have, kind of come to in my 22-year career is happy medium.
Yes.
And figuring that out and open-ended conversations about, ideas around that, and looking at it. And I mean, I've put up some things on Instagram right now, open-ended ideas that I did some Hanukkah ones. I've done some Christmas ones right now that are open-ended that I think are a great way to sort of meet everybody's needs.
Definitely. But I think of, again, kind of coming back to the conversation of, speaking to your families about what holidays it is that you celebrate and how can we honor and make that a part of our community? And can we take that as a learning experience, right? Of everybody kind of learning about, this holiday and this holiday, because especially during this time of year, it's very Christmas focused.
Yes.
And I mean, that comes under no surprise. That's just the narrative. But one of the things that I kind of noticed that was wonderful and that parents got excited about was when I worked in a center in Vancouver years ago where we had a high Jewish community. Mm-hmm. And so there was lots of focus on Christmas. And a lot of these children who, practiced the Jewish, or, you know, whose families practiced the Jewish faith, felt very left out of these conversations because Santa was not part of their celebration. So you had all these children who had, you know, Santa as part of their celebrations, and all these children, you know, all the Jewish children being like, well, I don't celebrate Santa, so this really has nothing to do with me, and the isolation that they felt. So what we ended up doing was we actually got those families. We reached out to those families and we said to them, can you tell us about Hanukkah?
Yes.
Because we don't know about Hanukkah. So can you devote maybe like 20 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever, one morning, and just come tell us what Hanukkah is about and the importance of Hanukkah, or just, you know, what festivities, like much like for Christmas, we put up Christmas trees. What is it that you do that makes, you know, that's a special family time in your household that has to do with Hanukkah? And the overwhelming response that we got was amazing, because not only were we respecting those families, but I think those children also felt heard. And it was fun for them to come in and talk about lighting the menorah and spinning the dreidels and how much they liked, you know, those celebrations. And for that, we also had a mother who, you know, she's very big in the art community, and she was showing children how to do, you know, art in, you know, that had to do with Hanukkah. And it was so cute because half those art materials or half those things that ended up making made it onto the Christmas trees at home.
It's lovely. And it's a great way to bring that, you know, your program community together. It's a wonderful opportunity for learning for everyone. I think it's just fantastic. And I think we need to really look at the needs of our program community.
Definitely. Definitely. And I kind of want to read this little excerpt, because when you were talking about inquiry, it brought me to this quote that I love, 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 from the book, From Teaching to Thinking, A Pedagogy for Reimagining Our Work by Ann Palo and Margie Carter. If you have not read it, I highly recommend you get on that. This is a fantastic book. But one of the quotes one of the passages that I've kind of highlighted here was, it says, educators look to their intuition and listen to their hearts with as much regard as they tend to their formal knowledge. They are fully present in the moment by moment unfolding of life that they share with each other and with children, leaning forward with eager curiosity and with glad engagement, confident that what offers itself is worthy of their full attention. This is what it means to be an educator in a culture of inquiry.
And I think we as educators hopefully are curious.
Yes.
And I call it the dedication to lifelong learning.
Definitely.
We need to be growing, evolving, learning, and that is directly reflected in our daily practice.
Absolutely.
I really agree with that. I couldn't agree more with that. And I think when we are in tune with children's curiosity and let it challenge us to be better and do more, possibilities are endless.
Couldn't have said it better.
Possibilities are endless. I did bring one of my favorite resources with me around this topic. It's called A Wonder Art Workshop by Sally Hughes. She's the founder of Fairy Dust Teaching. And it's absolutely, I don't know if you can see that. You can tell how well loved it is. I don't know if you can see all the dog ears here.
Those are the best books.
But it's absolutely fabulous. And it really talks about child-led experiences and nurturing imagination through this medium of art. And I just love the way that she has talked about, you know, schematic learning. And when we think about schematic learning and looking at how we can see examples of schematic learning in artwork with children, you know, whether it's transporting, picking up and moving materials from one location to the next. How often do we see that when children, you know, might bring over loose parts into clay or, you know, those, like I was talking about, those branches that they had brought in and then they wanted to use them for painting or transforming, changing materials. I love having pestle and mortars.
Pestle and mortars.
With my art, right? So that they can transform materials and trajectory. So watching how children, you know, can paint using trajectory with horizontal or vertical lines, and thinking about movement of materials. Yes. in that way. and thinking about enveloping. So enclosing materials. I love looking for enveloping, especially when children are painting, how they might paint something and then they cover it all up.
Yes.
It's amazing when you really think about that. And then connecting materials together and disconnecting and positioning of materials, the organization of materials. I really love to have near my free art station and loose parts. I love going to secondhand stores and getting, I call them 70 salad bowls, but the little wooden bowls where they can move loose parts around or bring them into an art experience if they'd like. I'm really thinking about making sure that the presentation of these materials is aesthetically pleasing.
Yes.
And we don't pay enough attention to that. You know, I love things like texture, anything from burlap, if I'm setting up sewing with burlap, with embroidery thread, or even painting. I've got a little video on Inspired ECE on Instagram, a reel about, in the fall, I did an example of just leaf painting on burlap, mm-hmm. which is great. And thinking about how we can make these experiences engaging and eye-catching for the children. Having Absolutely. A beautiful bouquet of flowers in the middle of a table with watercolor paints.
Love it. Yes. And right? I think that speaks volumes because making things beautiful respects the children. You know, I mean, I myself am not, you know, and I mean, let's take this back to our experience as adults. When we walk into an environment, we can feel an energy.
Totally.
And I mean, if the place is empty, if it's cold, if it's, you know, if it's not aesthetically pleasing, let's say, we don't want to be there. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I'm the type of person that if I very much go by my environment, if the environment is messy, if the environment is like not non-appealing, I don't want to be there. But if the environment is, excuse me, cozy, if it's warm, if you like, exactly like you said, if there's a bouquet of flowers over there, if there's some plants, if there's a big cozy blanket on the couch, this is the environment I want to be in. And I think the same is for children. And so why wouldn't we give them those beautiful materials and present them in a gorgeous way that drives them towards it?
When even thinking about like something as simple as painting, putting away those plastic paint pots, grab some little mason jars. That's the element of safe risk play and art working together, right?
Definitely.
And then you have even old muffin tins. I love putting an old muffin tin out with paint in there. So really thinking about changing up the presentation of materials and how we do that. I remember a few years ago working in a toddler program, and I had put down a big plastic sheet and I was doing clay with the toddlers on the floor.
Love it. I love doing clay on the floor.
One of the parents looked at me like, what's she doing? And I said, oh, no, you know, this is a perfect spot. We're down here and we're exploring clay.
Yes.
And afterwards she was like, I would have never thought to do something like that. I said, well, they're working together.
Yes. And it's great. Amazing how exactly like that, when you lower everything, how inclusive that can be for everybody. Because so many a times you will see in centers that everything is up high on a table. And especially if it's a multi-age program, that's great for maybe the 2, 3, 5-year-olds, but then the baby's reaching and they can't get to the material. So as soon as we lower everything down, there's a nice sense of everybody working collectively.
Absolutely. And the modeling of skill from the older children to the younger children as well. So yeah. Very, very important. And I think too, when you look at sometimes, I remember when I was teaching at college and we were talking about art and making sure like it was meeting the developmental levels of all of the children within a program space. So if you look at something like open-ended art materials, making sure that you have items that meet each developmental level. So there's going to be a little bit of challenge for those older children, and yet you have materials that are meeting the developmental levels of the younger children as well. So making sure that you're being mindful of that. And I love things like free art shelves, especially too in programs. I'm just going to use 3 to 5 for an example. I used to use them a lot with non-napper groups. So if you have groups of children that are not sleeping, my favorite, I would say, free art shelves are Lazy Susans that you can put in the middle of a table.
Yep.
Or those rolling carts. You can get them at Michael's. You can get them at IKEA, what have you. And they're fantastic. Or if you're a preschool, after school care shared space combination, those just slide wonderfully into a storage cupboard and come back out again. Definitely. So they're great and they don't take up very much space.
Not at all.
Thinking about offering at least two, if not three different art experiences or opportunities for children within your program space every day.
Definitely. And I want to come back to the changing of materials and the changing, you know, because I love how you were talking about, you know, the plastic paint pots. I really hate those. But I want to talk to you about smocks, because I think this is a very big topic when it comes to paint. And Exploring Art is the centers who are all about keeping it clean and all the smocks versus the centers who don't engage in smocks and let the exploration just happen.
I think the first part is communication with families.
Mm-hmm.
So what I've always done is I've always said, and I'm very clear in orientations and everything like that, I said, this is a place for play clothes because we play here.
Yes.
So not a place for your very expensive clothes, obviously. Mm-hmm. And things that can get washed. I don't work for Joe Clothing, but I think they're fantastic because they're not very expensive and they wash very well. And so thinking about the children being able to explore. So for me, I will have some smocks on hand, but I don't, if a child doesn't want to put one on for either sensory reasons or other reasons, what they're wearing, that has to be okay for them to be able to do that. And it's in the parent package. It's explained at orientation, all of that, because it's not just art. When you think about it, sensory play can be messy. Yes. Like, there's many things that we do. Science experiments can be messy. So thinking about
a water table,
totally, your day can be messy. To me, if I came home, you know, as an educator and I was a bit messy, that meant I had to have a good day. Yeah. So
I used to come home with handprints of paint all over my pants.
I remember going to the bank once and I had a lovely green handprint on my rear end.
Yes.
And the lady,
I have so many handprints.
No, you have a green. I said, oh, occupational hazard.
Yes. Oh, I have rocked handprints like on my bum, on my leg, on my back, like you name it.
Right. And so I think as long as we communicate with families and we say to them, this is a place for imagination, discovery, wonder, play, exploration, creativity. We're going to be exploring materials. I just want to let you know that, because families have to make the choice. They're choosing this program. So if you're choosing it, you need to make the right choice for you, your child, and your family. And this is who we are.
Yes.
So clear communication. And I think part of that too is the documentation of showing families the process of learning that goes into our days and what's happening. And I think, yes, having some smocks around. The other thing I think that's important about smocks and the way we set up art materials, I learned this from a visit to a preschool in Vancouver called Small Talk that supports children with speech and language. And I was really sort of turned a light bulb on for me early in my career. One of the teachers said to me there, you know, when you're putting out art materials, make sure that you're encouraging children to express their needs and their wants. Not having a piece of paper at every spot, or having a smock at every spot, or scissors at every spot. So if the children want something, you might have two or three out, but having it so that it encourages them to ask for what they need.
Yes.
I was like, aha, absolutely. We need to do that.
Yeah.
And it really, to me, made me a lot more mindful of the way that I was presenting materials. Mm-hmm. So if at the paint easel, if a child wants a smock and there's only one there and they're painting on the other side, and the basket of smocks is across the room, they can say, I'd like a smock, please. And I can say, they're right over here.
Yeah.
Supporting self-help skills, language development.
And there's always intention behind what is done. And that's the biggest, you know, thing. And I mean, how many skills are children being able to attain just from that one simple little act, like you said, like the ability to communicate, the ability, to be able to go say, oh, to go, you know, remember, okay, smocks are over there. I'm going to go help myself to one. I'm going to learn to put it on. And now I can get to what it is that I want to do.
And then the social connection of working or communicating with the other child that may be on the other side of the easel. Another thing I often do, and I talk about this in my messy art workshop too. Personally, I feel that the paint easel is the most underutilized piece of equipment in early childhood programs.
100%.
Shoved in the corner with a piece of newsprint on it, and you see primary colors sitting in plastic containers.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I love to put that piece of furniture in the limelight. I really do. Mm-hmm. And creating it so that two children, one can work on either side, and then having different colors of paint and different materials on either side so that it encourages that social development, language development for them to ask each other for what they would like.
Definitely. Love that. And again, it kind of comes back to the idea of thinking outside of the box, right? Because I mean, And I mean, through no fault of anybody, right? But we kind of see materials for, you know, as a this or that sometimes. Like, you know, this is only used for this and this is only used for that. And I had a conversation with an educator, a while back about how much she loves this idea of, you know, learning, different skills or even just learning about how things work through art. You know, she was talking about a child that she once had who wanted to tape or glue rocks onto a piece of paper, you know, and she could have easily said, no, that's not going to work. But she just decided, you know what, here's everything you need, go ham. And and I want to see how this child learns, you know, what will and what will not work. And, you know, that can come back to not just being an art, but a type of science. This is why I'm not a scientist.
Hypothesis. Yeah.
Thank you.
Child's idea.
Yes.
And interest. And then also looking at the educator learning alongside the child.
Yes, definitely.
Right. I think it's so, so very important. And I think the other thing that educators forget to do themselves is play.
Mm-hmm.
So what I love to do too is if I go and find a new material, I have to play with it first. Yes. I want to explore it. I want to try it. I want to see what it feels like. I want to know how I might use it. But then I also love the surprise of seeing how each individual child is going to explore material.
Definitely.
And what they're going to do with it.
Definitely. And I think that idea of educators needing to play too is so important because we can get so caught up in the tasks of the day. And learning, that things will get done. It's okay. Things will get done. And I love how you bring up this idea of play because I am 100% that person. I get toy FOMO or I get material FOMO where if I see a child using something that I have not used, I'm like, oh my gosh, like I want to use that toy or I want to play with that or I want to try what they're doing.
I was talking to someone yesterday about equipment and things. And I said, I was the supervisor that we were waiting at the door for the delivery. Like I was so excited for those delivery boxes to come and open them and see, how are we going to incorporate this into the program? Or, you know, how can we present this to the children in a new or different way or like that kind of thing. And I think too, as we touched on earlier, children feed off our energy.
Yes.
And if we have the desire to learn and the curiosity and still the sense of wonder, that's going to come into our programs.
Absolutely. And I think that's so wonderful and such a great way to sort of, I want to say conclude this, because without that wondering, without that excitement, without that joy, we can't expect children to show the same.
I agree.
Love it. And I want to just kind of close off by saying too, if you want another resource, because I know you shared an amazing resource, the From Teaching to Thinking is a great resource, but I highly, highly recommend, and I'm pretty sure most colleges in BC that teach ECE use this textbook in their curriculums, but I highly recommend that you check out the text, The Wonder of Learning. And it's it's part of the Reggio Children Collection. I don't know if you've ever read this one, Julie. I don't have it with me. I have it downstairs.
I think I have.
It's okay. So this is a fantastic text because it basically is broken up into three or four parts. And in each of these parts, it talks about what it is that the children are exploring. But apart from that, how they were able to deepen their learning and their thinking based on trying to make art pieces of what it is that they were exploring. It's a fantastic text. And what I'll do is I'll probably share a picture of this on the page, but I highly recommend that you check that one out. The Wonder of Learning, Reggio Children.
Sounds great.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me in this conversation, because I think it is a super important one to have, because this is, again, it's goes so much to our learning process, because I think so many of us grew up with thinking and knowing, or just understanding, that the idea of art always had to be product art, and not understanding that art is fluid, art is free, art is an expression of the individual self. And how is it that we can honor what art really is if we're always trying to just copy and paste?
Absolutely.
Love it. Well, thank you again so much for joining. My pleasure. Pardon me?
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening in on this week's episode of EC Honestly. If you have any questions or comments, send us an email at echonestly@gmail.com or DM us on Instagram @echonestly.